The Connection Between the Fed and the World. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishor, in for David Brancaccio. Europe's central bank raised interest rates by 0.75 percentage point today. It is fighting the same fight against inflation that we are here in the U.S. Inflation in the eurozone was at 9.1% in August. The Federal Reserve is also expected to raise rates in the U.S. later this month by another 0.75 percentage point. There is a connection between what the U.S. central bank does and economies around the world. Diane Swonk is chief economist at the audit, tax, and advisory firm KPMG. Good morning.
Good morning.
When the U.S. raises rates, that makes it more attractive to hold U.S. dollars. And so demand for the dollar goes up, and so the value of the dollar goes up. How is that affecting countries and central banks elsewhere in the world?
Well, the dollar is pretty unique. First of all, it's a reserve currency. So you have two forces pushing people into holding dollars versus other currencies. And as they do that, remember, other currencies depreciate. That means that, yeah, it's great for them to export goods because their goods are cheap, but anything they import is now going to be much more expensive.
So as we here in the U.S. fight inflation, we export that inflation to other countries that might owe a lot of debt internationally in dollars, and those dollars suddenly become more expensive. How is that playing out right now?
That means it's harder for them to actually service their debt. And that's a very difficult situation to be in, because at some point in time, we have seen that things default. And when they do, we don't know who's actually lent all the money to them. And what we do know in the global economy is that what happens abroad does not stay abroad. And what the Fed, one of the biggest concerns the Federal Reserve has is walking this tightrope of cooling inflation, but not breaking the system by raising rates too rapidly.
Diane Swonk is chief economist at the audit, tax, and advisory firm KPMG. Diane, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Temperatures in California are forecast to reach well into the triple digits today and tomorrow as a blistering heat wave there continues. Sacramento hit 116 degrees earlier this week. So far, the power grid in California is holding up. But climate change is increasingly posing threats to power grids across the country, Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports.
Climate change stresses the power grid in all sorts of ways. It's not just heat waves and high demand for electricity.
If you look at the West right now, we're seeing extensive drought, which has substantially reduced hydropower output.
Jesse Jenkins is at Princeton University.
High temperatures and dry conditions also make the West a tinderbox that's ripe for wildfires, which in California, when there's a high risk, they have been shutting off portions of the grid.
And often all of those things are happening at the same time. Joshua Rhodes at the University of Texas at Austin says to make the grid more resilient,
we're going to have to build stuff, but there's also we're going to have to manage stuff differently.
Build stuff like better batteries to store wind and solar power. And he says more clean, reliable sources of power like geothermal and nuclear. And in terms of managing things differently,
having better programs for basically paying people to consume less energy.
Instead of just asking people to use less energy at peak times, Rhodes says, could make a big difference. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
There are now, for the first time, more renewable energy jobs in the world than ones tied to fossil fuels. This is according to a report from the International Energy Agency. It says millions more jobs are on the way. Marketplace's Nova Sappho is here with more. Good morning, Nova.
Good morning, Sabri.
So more green jobs in the world than fossil fuel jobs. This marks a turning point.
Yeah, that's what we're hearing from the International Energy Agency. It says this is the first comprehensive inventory they know of the total global energy workforce. And the report says there are about 65 million energy sector jobs now. Just over half are in clean energy. This includes things like electric vehicle production, solar and wind power, and nuclear power. And by the end of the decade, they expect there will be 14 million more of these jobs.
Now, more green jobs does not mean necessarily more higher paying jobs. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. So this is also something interesting in the report, that the fossil fuel jobs that are around right now tend to pay more, often because they're unionized and in more established industries. The nuclear power sector, which is considered clean energy under this report, also pays more because those workers tend to be specialized. But overall, the report finds that the green energy sector does have some catching up to do on wages.
Now, this tipping point around green jobs versus fossil fuel jobs, that's globally speaking. What about here in the U.S.? How are we doing?
Well, we do have some catching up to do as well. About 40% of our energy jobs are net zero emissions areas. We do have the climate, health care, and tax law. That should increase clean energy jobs down the road.
All right, Marketplace's Nova Sappho, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
There were dramatic declines this year in both reading and math scores among nine-year-olds compared to 2020. This is from the National Assessment of Educational Progress. That is the bad news. The good news is that districts have an unprecedented amount of money at their disposal to help kids make up lost ground. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has more.
Researchers know there are certain things that can help kids catch up. Intensive tutoring, doubling the length of math class, extra instruction after school. Economist Tom Kane is with the Center for Education Policy Research at Harvard.
Everybody's been eager to get back to normal, but normal's not going to be enough right now.
The American Rescue Plan provided $122 billion to help public schools recover from the pandemic. And at least 20% of that must be spent on academic catch-up.
Nobody is saying, but wait a minute, is that going to be enough?
Part of the problem is you can have all the money in the world, but if you don't have the people to do it, it can't be done.
Natty Messick is principal of the only school in Fertile Beltrami District in northwestern Minnesota. It received just over $1 million in federal recovery funds, and Messick's been trying to hire someone to teach an elementary after-school program for over a year now. He says his current teaching workforce is tired.
We just don't have anybody on staff that is really excited about putting in more hours a day than they're already putting in.
At Oak Mountain Middle School in Birmingham, Alabama, Principal Larry Haynes created what he calls a zero period, where students can bring their breakfast to the classroom just after 7 a.m. and get extra time with the teacher. But he says it's been hard to connect with parents during the pandemic to help them understand the need.
For those 2 years, we weren't allowing anybody to come in this school because we were trying to protect, keep people from getting sick. And when we opened the doors back up, it sure is nice.
According to the new federal assessment, low-income kids had much greater declines in reading and math, and there could be long-term consequences. Again, Harvard economist Tom Kane.
If there is no catch-up, those kids will, their earnings will be about 5% lower for the rest of their lives.
Schools have spent the last 2 years just trying to make it through. Now they have the opportunity and the money to help students make up lost ground. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.